What do Salesforce, Dell, CVS Health, Philips, and T-Mobile have in common? They're all employer branding success stories, and you will meet them in San Diego at eBrandCon this May 22nd through the 24th. Over the course of 3 days, attendees will take advantage of an interactive learning experience to explore current EB strategies and trends. Get your ticket today to gather with lots of awesome, like-minded EB and recruitment marketing professionals across industries. Go to employerbrandingstrategies.com and register with link 15.
Hey, Sansvason! It's Jorgen Sundberg here with the Employer Branding Podcast by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. Today, we're discussing the power of physical environment as a strategic tool for unlocking the keystones of innovation, creativity, productivity, and collaboration. Let's start the show. Kirsty Groves, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. Hi.
Hi. So let us know who you are and what you do, please.
So I'm Kirsty Groves. I'm an author, I'm a speaker, and also a professor, but I consult around the world of work. And I guess what I do is I'm all about making work life better for people.
So tell me about inspiring work environments. Why is this important and why now?
Oh, wow. So I think really when it comes to things like innovation, for example, you really need to have inspiration. But not only that, I think just at the very, very basic level, if you can have inspired people at work, then really, you know, you've done half the job. Inspired people, I think, will do a great job. And that's what it's all about. And the reason I think now is more than ever, we are requiring people to be more creative, to think a little bit differently, to push harder. And it's not about just simply, operating in a command and control environment. So I think inspiring work environments are absolutely the backdrop to making this happen.
And talk to me about, we're a bit challenged here because we're on a podcast, so we can't really see what a space would look like, but what would be some of the key spatial types for supporting innovation activity and behavior?
Well, actually, I think it's great that we're in a podcast because I think mostly what happens is we often look at those kind of glossy pictures of, you know, beanbags and slides and breakout areas and, exposed bricks and, filament lamps and go, wow, you know, that's an inspiring place or that's a creative environment. But actually, I think it's much, much, much more important to think about the principles and the building blocks that create a space for innovation or a place that will inspire people. And I think it really does depend on the group of people that you're trying to get together, the how you want them to work, and also the industry you're in. But effectively, there are some very simple building blocks. People need to be able to get their head down and be productive. They need to be able to experiment and try out things, ideas, communicate those ideas without fear of being judged or getting it wrong. People need to also communicate with others. You know, sometimes it's their team and they need to be able to access those people really, really quickly. And then sometimes they just need to be able to explore new and different, completely unrelated topics. So I think spaces for innovation need to kind of support these different activities. And what tends to happen at work is that we expect people to be creative and have great ideas and get stuff done at a desk all day, every day. And it just doesn't happen like that.
So you've got four pillars: reflection, collaboration, stimulation, and play. Mm-hmm. That's the four types of activities that take place in a work day.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if you think about any creative process, let me kind of rewind a little bit. If you just think about the places that you go to be inspired most, you know, just think about it right now. I mean, chances are that those places are things like in nature or, you know, outside or, you know, on the beach or, sometimes it's just like in bed as you're waking up in the morning or in the shower. These places are all places where your brain can really access new and different thinking. And that's the kind of those eureka moments that we tend not to have at a desk at work. But of course, there are also these moments where we really need to kind of reflect or get your head down and focus. So the point about the different types of creative spaces or the different kind of, I guess, pillars or building blocks is that you really need to think about the different types of thinking and the different types of activities that people need to do. So collaboration is kind of obvious. It's working with other people. Stimulation is about giving your brain new and different stimulus to help you think about the problem from maybe a different angle. Reflection is not just about kind of thinking about a problem that you might be focusing on, but it also can just be completely switching off. And then finally, play. That can be something, you know, as simple as just having a space where you can just write things on a wall and explore and experiment and make things, as opposed to switching off and maybe playing a game with your colleagues. And there are lots of different reasons that those different types of places work for individuals and for groups.
Okay, so I get collaboration, so that would be perhaps a room or a place where people meet. Reflection, what would be a good space for reflection? Would it just be some people outside in the forest, or how would you do that in an office environment?
Right. It's a great question, because I think with all of these different types of place, you can look at it from, there's almost a spectrum between the individual and also the group. And this is why I think it's really dangerous to just say, this is what a space for reflection looks like. I think there's also different tones that you can put to it. So for example, it could be a quiet space where someone can just go and work on a report uninterrupted, you know, without any technology. It could be a project room or a focus or war room, sometimes we call it, where you and your team can go and disappear and just write a whole load of things on the wall or experiment something or work on something. So the kind of the reflective place can be something that allows you to contemplate, but it can also allow you to be something that allows you to kind of focus and get your head down.
So I guess the ultimate reflection place would be like, you know, the offsite meetings at somewhere completely different. Is there merit to doing offsite meetings completely outside of the office building, or could you do it in a room in the building?
I think there's absolutely merit to going offsite. I mean, but for certain types of interactions, and to your point as well about just going off for a walk in the forest, I think the really importantly, I think we should also be thinking outside the office building when we're thinking about spaces, because often you can create just by virtue of changing the environment, i.e., just going out to a cafe, to a park, or to an offsite space. For a workshop, you can allow that group of people or those individuals to think differently about a problem. Sometimes change is as good as a holiday in this case, or work.
So play areas. Mm-hmm. not for children, but for adults. So
yeah,
looking at like bean bags and chutes and all these things. Sometimes there's a perception that it looks cool, it's a bit almost like a hygiene factor, but these things don't actually get used on a daily basis.
Right. Absolutely. I think this is the space, this is the type of space that's been misunderstood the most. I think because of the boom of Silicon Valley, where we had Google coming in with their slides and their beanbags and their lava lamps and going, wow, you know, they just kind of broke the traditional office as we knew it in terms of what it could look like. They were quite daring about it. But they're also very playful as an organization. Play is not about childishness for its own sake. But there's plenty of research and, you know, my own experience in business that shows that levity can be an incredibly powerful thing when it comes to communication, forming bonds between people, and of course creativity. Because if you are not just stuck with trying to come up with one right answer, then actually a little playfulness can inject the kind of mental agility that you need to think differently. So there's a huge role for play in business, but that doesn't necessarily mean primary colors and, you know, kindergarten type environments. You know, it could, I mean, a playful environment could be one that simply just has maybe an injection of wit about it. I've seen some fantastic examples where you've got, it's encouraging people to take the stairs, for example. There was a fantastic example of this where all the way up the stairs, they had little kind of signs telling people how many calories that they'd burnt along the way, and little encouraging communication around that. Now, that's a sense of playfulness. And that's not necessarily saying, right, you go to this room and therefore you are being playful, or you shoot down a slide and therefore you're going to be acting, you know, like a child and therefore more creative. It's just a general sense of playfulness that you can inject that gets people thinking differently.
Great. Okay. And so I can imagine it varies a lot from one organization to another. Mm-hmm. How do you define the right environment for your company?
Really good question. It's so important to do this for yourself. I think the way that I go about doing it is linking the what I call the environment mission to your overall vision, and using your values and your behaviors that you need people to exhibit into kind of linking into that environment mission. And the environment mission then becomes something that you as leaders agree upon, and it helps kind of guide decisions. So for example, There's a wonderful company in Australia called Medibank. They are a company that's all about, they're a health assurance company. And their overall mission their vision is for better health. So they then translated this for better health into an environment mission, which was, how can we make our work environment the healthiest work environment in the world? You know, quite a lofty ambition. But that was a really important thing for them to kind of say, right, how does, every decision that we make around getting people moving, getting people interacting with each other socially, keeping them healthy nutritionally, and giving them kind of a psychological sense of health and well-being, that is all then played out through the decisions that they make and the way that they implement those decisions through their physical environment. So I think it's a really, really important point that you make. And the biggest thing I'd say to anyone is, do not cut and paste. You know, it will not work if you just say, I've been around Microsoft and they've got, you know, amazing, amazing breakout spaces, and let's just do that and expect it to work, because it simply won't, unless you really think about why you're doing it, and then using your own culture and your own values and your own internal brand to then help you to guide, you know, to guide the decisions you make around how to roll it out and how to create the environment.
So in addition to the cookie cutter approach, are there any other pitfalls that companies should avoid when looking at physical spaces?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I would say that's number one. Mm-hmm. But I think the second one is looking at the physical environment, and this is kind of a traditional approach, looking at the environment from an efficiency standpoint. And what I mean by that is traditional office spaces have always been managed as an overhead. And so your facilities team will be looking at how they can, and your financial director, you know, of course, we'll be looking at how can we minimize this asset and make sure that we are kind of sweating it as much as possible. That's of course a very, very important aspect, but unless you also understand how the physical environment can be used as a strategic tool, if you like, to unlock people's efficiency, their productivity, their collaboration behavior, their creativity, then actually you can be damaging your business big time. So that's where I see it fall down the most, when people have approached the environment from a very kind of lean perspective, you know, making sure that clean desk policies are enforced, and you've got almost traffic warden-like people coming around and forcing people to use lockers. And that's where you start to see, you know, the engagement of people really flounder.
Interesting that. Okay, so you talk about the business case here. Is there a way to measure the return on investment on having an effective workspace?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think the short answer to this is you really need to have a number of different measures, because if you're just looking at it from that kind of what I call the low level efficiency perspective, then you could be then obviously kind of damaging the rest of the business. So I look at the different levels of return on investment through efficiency, through effectiveness. So how productive are your people? And of course, you need to define what productivity means and what that looks like. How engaged are people? You know, if you're trying to increase the effectiveness of a sales team, then looking at how you allow them to interact and how they kind of play back their tacit information, for example, how is that having an effect on their sales? You can basically, whatever you want to measure, you really need to just think about those elements and start to kind of measure those. I think the one thing I would say is that as you start to create much more inspiring work environments, the measures become less and less tangible. And so I use lots of more qualitative measures, such as, you know, understanding it's more around satisfaction and engagement, and also just really noticing maybe how many collisions you see happening, and what are the kind of people's kind of networking and energy levels. So they're much, much, much less tangible. But if they are mixed in with those more tangible measures, like how many ideas have we got through our innovation pipeline this year, then actually can start to see a really, really full picture.
Interesting. Okay. And I know you've gone behind the scenes of some of the world's most innovative companies. Mm-hmm. What insights can you share there? What companies are doing it right? Which ones should we perhaps take some inspiration from?
Well, obviously, it depends on how big your organization is, because I think you can have some, you know, really good examples in some of the larger companies, like Microsoft, for example, who are doing a fabulous job of taking an absolute monster of a company. Even though they're a tech company, they were really struggling with their kind of with their brand internally and externally, and they've completely changed the way that they view their physical environment and how they use that to, you know, unlock the performance of their people. And they're doing this as a massive, massive, massive effort. And the way that they're doing it is by involving people a lot, prototyping a lot, and even prototyping in situ. So they'll allow people to kind of hack their spaces and create their own spaces to make sure that they are creating the right team environments that really work for them. So that's a kind of, I think that's a good example. I think other companies that do it really well are ones that just focus down on the basics and do basics really, really well. And what I mean by that is just making sure that things work, that you know, people have access to light, that Wi-Fi is working. I mean, I'd call that a basic. I don't know about you, you know. And just doing it with a sense of their own personality. So some great examples of that, I would say, are Innocent Drinks, who you know, they do things like expressing their failures of all of the products that they've tried in the past and have flopped. They put them up on the wall in a really creative way, so that people are reminded that it's okay to try things out and fail. You know, other companies have created, given people the opportunity to create their own team spaces by having a kind of a kit of parts and a space, and say, look, you can create the space that you want as you want it. It doesn't really matter. I don't care what it looks like, so long as you're within this area and you're safe. And I've seen other companies like Airbnb, for example, create beautiful spaces by taking a team of people who are really interested in the design process and teaching them along the way about that design process, so that they get a real sense of genuine pride around a space that actually works and is beautiful, rather than something that's just been hacked together. So there's lots of different ways that I've seen organizations put this into practice.
Great. Well, yeah, I can vouch for innocent fruits and, innocent drinks. The building is called the Fruit Towers. Mm-hmm. And another funny feature there is that they have a banana phone, there are lots of banana phones throughout the building. And it's essentially when you buy one of their products, it says, call us at Fruit Towers, call the banana phone. So if you can ring that number, all those phones will ring in the whole building until someone picks up. It could be the CEO, or it could be someone on reception. So you never know who's going to pick up the phone. So yeah, an interesting place for sure. Mm-hmm. Right. And lots of employer brand managers will be listening to this episode today, and they're thinking, okay, how can I take this away and improve on our employer brand? So what would be your top tips to them?
I think the first one would be make it your business. This is an opportunity to express your brand through the physical environment, and it doesn't have to just be left to facilities managers. And I think that's what happens often. We just think that it's just some bricks and mortar that somebody has to maintain and keep going. So I think number one, I would say, make it your business, get involved, and create an environment team. I've already mentioned this about the basics. Just really focus in on the basics and do them brilliantly. Find out the things like, it might be a kitchen area. Make sure that people have got somewhere where they can just sit down and catch up with each other over, a bowl of cereal or something. I mean, there is a very good reason that those the free kitchens work. It's a very, very simple, basic thing, food, that can bring people together and help them to get on with each other. And I think the third one is involve people. The more that you can involve people in the creation or the maintenance or just the kind of the general upkeep or kind of use of an environment, the more that they will care about it, and the more opportunity that everybody has to kind of create a place that really works. Because seldom is a physical environment set in stone. It really shouldn't be. It should always be changing as the business and the culture changes.
Got it. Okay. Final question. If we look into Kirsty's crystal ball, what's up next for physical spaces and workspaces?
Wow. Well, I have to say, I don't know everything. I can't really tell you what's next, but I can tell you what's on the horizon. I think there's a really big tide of change around organizations realizing that physical space is something that they can use. I think really embracing mobility and our ability to work from multiple different places is a massive, massive opportunity for organizations to make their environments more flexible. And I think that's what we're going to see more and more happen. More and more, we'll have less of these kind of seas of desks in spaces, and we'll see lots and lots of different environments that will support different tones of and interactions at work.
Interesting. Right. So please let our listeners know where they can find you and connect with yourself, and also tell us about your two books now, I think it is.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, so my website is kirstygroves.com. That's Kirsty, K-U-R-S-T-Y, Groves, G-R-O-V-E-S. And I'm on Twitter as well, Kirsty G, at Kirsty G. And then my two books, my first book is called I Wish I Worked There. And it's a kind of peek into some of the most creative spaces in business. It's a little out of date, but the principles still hold. And then there's lots of nice pictures in it. And then my second book has fewer pictures, but more science. And it's called Spaces for Innovation. And that is about the science and design of inspiring work environments. And that's the one that if you need any backup, any models, any research, any statistics or stories to help make the case for change in your environment, then that's the book that I would go to.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Kirsty.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
All right. I hope that was useful. Everything Kirsty and I discussed will, of course, be in the show notes article, which you'll be able to find at employerbrandingpodcast.com. Right, so who's going to San Diego at the end of May? The Employer Branding Strategies Conference is taking place on May 22nd through the 24th, and it looks like it will be great. It's my first time going and speaking, so really looking forward to this one. Three of us here from Link Humans will be flying over from London, and two of us are making a very nice holiday out of it, me not included. Not jealous at all. Anywho, check out the event at employerbrandingstrategies.com, and if you decide to book, tap in LINK15 for 15% off your tickets. Now, finally, if you find this podcast useful, please, 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 can you do me a favor and write a review in Apple Podcasts? Just an honest review will do, and it really helps us to reach more people. Thank you so much in advance for doing that. That's it. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time, and hey do!
What did the cheese say to itself in the mirror?
No idea.
Halloumi!